listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 237 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how are you doing?
Doing great. I don't know if you saw it yet, but this week I launched a new music video starring cat GIFs, because for a decade now we've been talking about how cats are the key to viral videos. So I finally took our own advice and threw some cats into a music video.
Perfect. Oh, I hadn't seen that yet. I look forward to checking that out.
Yeah, check it out. It's got some guitar solos and guitar riffs, so it's up your alley.
You know, I've said it before on the podcast, I think, that I'm more of a dog person, so I really have no hope in this current music business.
Well, then this video, half of the guitars will be for you and the cats, not so much.
Okay, perfect. Today we have some news that we don't do the news segment anymore, but we've gathered up some news items that we thought were important over the last 6 months, you know, the first half of 2019, a couple of things that have popped up that we thought worthy of discussion. And then we have listener calls and emails, some great contributions from those of you listening. But first, Chris, last episode, I should say, I really teased big an announcement that we were going to be doing for the conference. We've made that announcement.
It is out there.
Was it everything you thought it would be?
Well, given that I knew what it was, it turned out to be exactly what I thought it would be. But it's but that doesn't mean it's not amazing. It's super excited. Exciting. I am super excited. It's going to be awesome.
Yes, we officially announced that Questlove will be taking part of a keynote session in the DIY Musician Conference in Austin in just, at the time of recording, it is 2 weeks out. And also, in a separate session, DMC of Run DMC will be there. And he's got an amazing story, and it's going to be different and pull a little heartstrings, I bet, for many people than what you might expect from someone from Run DMC. And that's huge. It's just to get that caliber of artists, not only taking part, but wanting to take part in our conference was pretty amazing. Both of these instances, they reached out to us saying, we want to be a part of this conference. And that blew my mind.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited for lots of reasons, but you know, like one, Questlove has his, you know, hands or whatever the term is on so many aspects of the entertainment industry, not just like being a band leader and drummer and stuff, but he's also like a tech consultant and like a kind of musicologist, and just there's so many areas he can pull from to share tips and wisdom and all that stuff. And then with DMC, I'm psyched because I think the focus of his talk will be kind of like a glimpse behind all the glitz and fame of being this guy who, like, you know, pioneered a genre and sold millions of records and all kinds of broke all kinds of barriers down, but meanwhile was kind of getting more and more unhappy or something in how we kind of dealt with those. I don't know if they're demons, but you know, the sort of how we came through that, which I think is going to be a really moving story.
Yeah. When I posted this on Facebook, people were like, oh my gosh. And then one person asked, what does this have to do with being a DIY musician? And you might be asking yourself that right now. And my response is this: at the core, we're all artists. It doesn't matter how popular you are or how new you are and are still building an audience. At the core, we're all artists trying to create something and trying to express things. And you can learn about the artist journey, the artist path from artists at all levels of their career. Questlove specifically has a new book. He's got several out. That came out this last April, I believe. It's about creativity. I don't have it in front of me. I've had the book since it came out. And if you've been paying attention on the podcast, I've talked many times about how the creative process and the idea of how you can bring certain people together and make magic, and other people who are equally talented and just have nothing to show for your efforts has always intrigued me. And what sparks that creative spark? So I had been thinking about those things and anticipating the release of his book because that's what it was about. And that's the direction of the conversation he wants to have at our conference. And I've heard him interviewed on podcasts and read about him. And the guy is just brilliant and is one of those people that hearing words come out of his mouth is inspiring because he's just so smart and knows music more than probably anybody I could ever imagine knowing music, and just has such a career path that's gone in so many directions and seen success. With DMC, man, pioneering a genre, being on the forefront of just a cultural shift, and then what all that brings and how the those things impact you as a person. He also has a book out. It's a very different direction. It's dealing with thoughts of suicide and things like that. And I think people are going to really, really get something out of it. The thing I love about our conference is there's so much great content about helping artists move their career forward, and a lot of like tactics and strategies and go do this and here's something like a program you can try. But what I really, really love about our conference, it's honestly probably the only conference I've been to out of all the conferences I go to where I find myself crying a lot.
Right. Me too. When you interviewed Mary Grosher, I forget, was that 2 years ago in Nashville?
Yes.
I mean, not just me. I think probably 75% of the room was crying by the time that that speech was done and she'd played a couple songs. It was like cut right to what it means to really be an artist. And like you said, it's not ultimately it's not about the money and the fame and the rewards and stuff. It's about those like expressing that thing that's so deep and like connecting and it's so like simple and magical at its core.
Yeah. And those are the things, honestly, that really keep me going. The idea that I'm not alone. I'm not out there struggling by myself or feeling these things, the only person ever feeling these things and seeing the highs and the lows. And when you hear DMC's story, you're like, man, even at that level, this is still a struggle. And it's something, you know, that it just being together with like-minded folks, it really, really reorients my year and my drive as an artist. There is still time to get tickets. DIYMusicianCon.com. Go there. Check out the schedule. The whole schedule is up there. There's just so much goodness in the weekend. It's only $159. It's worth spending the money to get to Austin to really invest in your career and just sit in it for a whole weekend with no distractions and be with other people doing the same thing. So DIYMusicianCon.com. This is the last podcast we'll do before the conference. The next one will be live in Austin, taping, I should say, in front of an audience. So we hope to see you in Austin. I'm super excited, and I know it's going to be a life-changing weekend.
Yeah. I'm wondering now, the bulk of today's conversation is going to be sort of a quick run through of a bunch of important news items. Do you want to go from teasing that podcast topic to some news about Pledge Music?
Sure.
Or did you have anything else in mind before we get into that?
I didn't. This is all free form.
All right. It seemed like a good segue.
Yeah. Did you want me to go?
Oh, no, I could say it then.
Okay.
What we're thinking about for the topic of our live podcast is, you had a clever title for it, but it's about the decline and questionable merits of crowdfunding at this point when it is extremely labor intensive. And so that's kind of the topic of the discussion. But then, you know, that obviously plays into some huge news over the last 6 months of Pledge Music shafting many of the people who are using their platform to fan fund their album projects and, you know, having run these massive campaigns where fans were contributing and really getting invested. And then the artist can't get a hold of Pledge Music to get the money, and Pledge Music for a while kept sort of delaying and having excuses, and now it's just basically collapsed, and these artists are, you know, shafted.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, the title of our session is "Crowdfunding is Dead. What's Next?"
Right. Okay.
Yeah, it's a sad story. And people are probably going to go to jail. And it's not, I kind of say that laughing, but it's not funny because what was going on behind the scenes was really holding artists' money and trying to, I don't know, you know, all the details aren't out yet. So it's like in its essence, it's they didn't have enough money to run their business. They were holding the money, trying to run their business, but no, you know, not enough money was coming in to pay out artists and run their business. In its essence, that's what it sounds like happened. Now, as details emerge and, you know, this morning it looks like they've been approved to go into bankruptcy and sell off their assets, more details may emerge about wrongdoings and such. And I know there's been lots of accusations, but I don't know what's happened. It's just one of those reminders that you've got to be careful with, you know, the companies that are handling your money as an artist. I always get frustrated when I see artists, you know, jump for the what seems to be the latest shiny object to handle their music, and then they wonder why they're not getting paid. And, you know, that's just something at CD Baby. We've paid artists every week for 21 years, and we don't mess around with it. It is like priority number one, even more so than keeping the lights on in the building. It's
yeah, get those the artists paid. And then the other thing, I mean, I'm not a finance expert by any means, so I'm probably using the wrong terms, but like a lot of the accusations are almost that it's like that Pledge Music became some kind of Ponzi scheme or something where like they weren't holding those funds in escrow or whatever the equivalent is and kind of keeping that sacred. Like, okay, your fans are contributing. We're going to hold this money for you and it will be protected. And then once it's time to claim it, here it is. Like, it seems like they were using those funds to do other things like that weren't, again, weren't keeping their eye on what is the most important thing, which is the artist's well-being. Because after all, that is who they're serving. Like their business only exists to serve artists. So,
yeah. And their business only exists if artists
trust them. Right.
But you know, those private yachts don't stay gassed up on their own.
No, that's true.
And I don't know that if that's what was going on, but there you can dive deep into that story and read a lot. It's just been a sad demise. The last crowdfunding project I did, and it will be the last, as you will hear in our session in Austin, was through Pledge Music. And there were some things I liked about it. There was some things that I thought, huh, this is kind of concerning. And that is the fact that they hold on to the money until you have officially fulfilled all the obligations, which makes sense on one level. But on the other side, it's like, I needed that money to fulfill the obligations.
To fulfill the stuff, right.
So yes, that's been a big news story through the beginning of 2019 and the end of 2018, but it's really starting to just all fall apart here. So what's next, Chris?
Well, the next thing's a little more uplifting, which is that Instagram Stories now gives you a way to pretty simply create these little 15-second lyric videos. Like, you know, like you can create a story, which is maximum 15 seconds, but instantly pull your lyrics into it, and they're auto-populated, and they kind of scroll through as your song plays. If you select your music, the lyrics will kind of toggle through or whatever the term is, which I think is really cool. It opens up a whole other, you know, facet for how you can express these little snippets of your music and stuff. And while it is quote instant to create them, you have to do kind of a bunch of stuff on the back end before you have that ability. So I was just going to run through that really quick. The first thing you want to do is make sure your music is available in Instagram Stories. CD Baby will do that for you if you're opted in for our social video monetization program, which comes included with our distribution. Once your music's on Instagram, then you have to go to this service called Musics Match. It's a M-U-S-I-X match. What do you do there? You have to get verified as an artist there. And then you have to wait a little while. This requires a lot of patience. After a few days or a week or so, you'll get verified. And then you go back into your Musics Match account and you find your music and you enter in the lyrics. And they have some pretty strict guidelines for how those need to be entered in, you know, avoiding commas, certain things about capitalization, all that stuff. So you enter those in. then you wait a little longer. And then if you get the Music Match app on your phone, then what you do is you you open up the app, you find your music, which now is sort of associated with the lyrics, and the app will give you a chance to listen to the song, and you manually scroll, you use a kind of a just scrolling on the screen through the lines of your song in rhythm with the music, so that basically Music's Match knows how to tell Instagram which lyrics to pull into the story in time with the music. Because again, you're only going to get a 15 second snippet of the music. So that's the process. And once you go through that sort of toggling, syncing the lyrics to the music in the Music's Match app, you wait even longer, and finally it will show up on Instagram stories. But so a little bit of work there, but once you do all that, it's really cool.
Yeah, I've seen some of the stuff you've been doing with it.
It's not a, it's not supposed to be like a lyric video, and you know, it's not a 3 or 4 minute thing. Again, it's, but like, I feel like Instagram stories, like the quicker the better. Sometimes it's fine to be campy and absurd or whatever. So like, don't think of it as that they have to be these masterpieces. Like you could just shoot whatever, shoot your neighbor riding his bike down the street and then put your lyrics up to it.
What I like about it is the idea that you can tie visually some of the, maybe the, because it's only 15 seconds. So maybe you're able to snag part of the chorus or a line in the verse. And this is what I've seen a few people doing just with these in general, not necessarily artists, but even just fans, because you can snag some lyrics as a fan. But like, they might have a moody picture or a little video snippet that matches the feel of a song. And it's just, to me, it's those little nuggets that you can throw out there that sort of invoke more meaning into your music.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Cool.
All right. What? So everyone should be checking out that feature on Instagram. We have an article on the DIY Musician blog with all those details. I know Chris just listed a lot of steps, but we have that all laid out for you on the DIY Musician blog. And if you're not on Instagram, to me, you're making a mistake. I haven't seen any official, you know, statements from, you know, third parties that tally all the data to find out what's what. But everyone's been talking about how it's the most effective platform for music promotion. I just think the reason it's so great is it gives you so many ways to tell a compelling story all on one platform, whether it's through stories, whether it's through the regular image, a feed, all of that. To me, it's just visual, there's audio, there's hashtags that work really well. It's just the platform that makes it easy to tell a compelling story and allow your career to unfold in front of your fans' eyes and let them experience what you're doing. Where Facebook feels very disjointed, same with Twitter. Both those platforms have their merits, but to me, I think Instagram right now is the one that makes it the easiest and is the most fun to use.
Yeah. And that, just two super quick things related to that is IGTV made some changes at some point recently, and I have not posted a video there in a while. And I posted this, the music video I was talking about at the beginning of the episode, to IGTV. And for me, this is the first time I've been able to post the standard, like sort of widescreen video to IGTV, and it just auto populates it as, you know, it, based on the orientation of your phone, it's automatically, you know, moving it to how you'd want to view it. And it auto-populated an Instagram post in my normal feed that ended up driving a bunch of views that I wasn't even really intending. I kind of thought, oh, I'll just park that video at IGTV. And then suddenly I realized they'd made these changes to really draw in a lot of viewers, which is cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see. Next on the list, I had Spotify has launched a new app, which is trying to compete with a service like Pandora Radio. It's called Spotify Stations, and it's, you know, a non-interactive streaming service where, you know, there's some customization and it pulls in your listening history from your standard Spotify account. the reason that's just important to know about is that if your music's already on Spotify, if CD Baby's distributed your music to Spotify, it will also be in Spotify stations, and you'll be paid the same way that that money will come through through CD Baby. It's not going through a service like Sound Exchange.
You know, these music services are all going to start trying to copy all the pieces that are working. And Pandora has had diehard fans forever. And, you know, it doesn't get talked as much about these days. They're making some adjustments over there at Pandora, and they're doing some good stuff. We've mentioned on the podcast some things that they're working on that I think are going to be really great for their product. But, you know, there's something about the passive listening experience that a lot of people really like. And so Spotify is trying to offer that in their service, so you can just select something and it'll play pretty much indefinitely, as opposed to going and finding a playlist of, you know, 60 songs and then having to go find another playlist of 60 songs.
Yeah. And to be clear, it is a separate app from the Spotify's typical app. It's ad supported, so people can use it for free and they just listen to commercials. If you're a paid Spotify subscriber, you can use Spotify Stations app commercial free.
Excellent. All of that is true.
Yeah. The last couple news items I wanted to get through, we might have briefly mentioned in our news segments earlier, but we are now making it super easy through show.co to get your Spotify URI, which is the identifier code for your music on Spotify, for you to use in a pre-save campaign. And so basically the way you do that is when you've signed up your music with CD Baby, you either have a UPC that you've purchased elsewhere, or maybe we've assigned you a UPC barcode. All you got to do is take that number and put it into your show.co pre-save campaign as you're creating it. And we will use that to automatically pull Spotify's URI through our connection with Spotify and auto-populate your campaign with that information, which is helping you kind of avoid a few steps that delayed campaigns a day or two in the past.
That tool, we've been working a lot on show.co to make it a lot easier to especially do like the pre-saves. And yeah, it's super easy to get that now and makes it even easier.
Yeah. And show.co is also free for you to use. If you create an account through your CD Baby dashboard, you will have the pre-save option for free. And that's something labels and, you know, big management clients and stuff, they have to pay for.
And I'll say something right here about show.co and our pre-save option. There's some other options that have popped up through other services out there on the web that allow you to do a Spotify pre-save. However, when it comes down to it, what I like about show.co, it's very different in that you can incentivize your fans to take action. So they're pre-saving to get access to something. You don't have to do it that way, but when I think about it, all the other services, it's just a pre-save button. It's like pre-save. Okay, I clicked pre-save. But me as a fan, even for my, you know, the artist I love the most, if they're not incentivizing me for any way to click the pre-save button, I know it's going to be available that Friday it comes out. I'm not concerned about supply.
Yeah, right. And if it's U2 or one of your favorite bands, you are also going to get the media reminder that it's out. So there's no way you're not going to hear it on the Friday of its release. But if the Edge says, hey, pre-save now and watch this 30-second clip of my guitar effects I used in this song, you're definitely going to click it. So that's the kind of thing.
Done and done.
Right. That is the kind of thing show.co lets you do as an artist.
Yes, that's how you use show.co strategically to get your fans to do something that, quite honestly, doesn't really benefit them all that much. It's really for you. So you're trying to incentivize them to do something that benefits you. So all the other pre-save services out there that I've seen, none of them have that feature. It's all just a button that you're just begging fans to click for no benefit to them. And so that's why I love the way show.co works. And if The Edge did do that, yes, I would be the first to click that pre-save button. Even all The Edge would have to do is say, like, we posted tracks, soloed guitar tracks off our new album, pre-save, and you can listen to your heart's content.
Hey,
and I would listen.
You too, listen. If you're listening to us, we might really be able to unlock some doors for you guys.
I think they should be listening to this podcast. They're doing everything wrong lately. Aside from the sold out world tours and stadiums, yeah, they've got that figured out. They make a spectacle, people show up. But as far as releasing music, Bono, Edge, I've got a busy weekend, but I'm willing to clear some time out for you if you want to have a little consulting session and we can get this whole, you know, way you're releasing music these days back on track.
Let's see.
So we're here for all artists.
We are all levels. Speaking of the way you're releasing music and where and how people are consuming it, this also is maybe a rerun from something we announced earlier, but I think it's important to repeat. Apple is kind of, sort of closing iTunes after 18 something years. iTunes being, you know, the game changing retail behemoth for music downloads. That's the reason I say kind of, sort of, is that iTunes Music Store is still going to live within the Apple Music app. So you'll still be able to download stuff that your fans that have purchased your music from iTunes in the past can still access that music. But basically, iTunes had become too confusing. They were selling too many things, shows, movies, songs, lawn furniture, whatever else. Not really lawn furniture, but it was becoming just too much. So they basically broke that into, I think, three dedicated apps, one for podcasts, one for music, one for film and TV. I think it's worth repeating because I was surprised when I posted about it on our blog that everyone seemed mostly fine with this change. I was expecting a big kind of either a bunch of people really sad about this development or complaining or whatever. And I guess I was thrilled to see that most people just realize we're pretty close to the point in our lives when we're accepting that we pay for access to music and we don't expect to own music in the same way that we once did. So I found that encouraging.
Well, here's a little dose of honesty. The Apple or the iTunes software, the app, whatever you want to call it, has been a terrible experience for ages.
For a long time.
And so it is a maddening experience to use that software because, you know, they built it originally, those of you younger in the listening audience, they built it originally just to be a library curator for the downloads on your computer before they even had the store. And then they added the store on top of that. And then they added Apple Music on top of that. And it's never really morphed into a new experience really catered to even the download experience. It still was still functioning more like a library curator. Yeah, organizing the files on your hard drive. So it's much needed. Even if you love downloads and are going to continue to buy downloads, I think this is a welcome change because the experience has been so terrible. Instead of having this thing that's trying to be multiple service, multiple, you know, needs, they're going to break it down and have more focus. So, you know, to me, it signals, yes, the focus on the iTunes store is going away. But in reality, what's the difference between Apple Music and iTunes if you can push a button and also buy it? Nothing. It's just a matter of they're trying to simplify, lighten the load, and restructure it a bit. You know, if it's no trouble to Apple and it's still making them money, they'll keep a download button on there for as long as people will keep pushing it if it makes sense. If it doesn't make sense, they'll remove it. But also this does set the stage for them to probably carve it out eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just had one other quick news item before we get to the calls and emails. But YouTube recently has made a bunch of changes. That YouTube Music and YouTube Premium are now available in 50 countries. Which means if you're, you know, using CD Baby for distribution, your music can be monetized in a lot more territories around the world on YouTube. But at the very same time as you have this kind of expansion of possibilities, there are these new EU Europe laws about copyright that are really tightening and making things harder for user-generated content creators who wanted to maybe use your song in one of their videos or whatever. So content ID as a source of income for artists is probably going to shrink a little bit in Europe as this plays out. I'm not sure exactly when things kick in for real, but those are some things. If you make efforts in YouTube and if you're making money on YouTube, just keep your eye on those developments.
Yeah, and if you are at the DIY Musician Conference in Austin, August 16th through 18th, which is just a week away from the day I'm recording this, the YouTube team will be there and you can ask them questions about this and they can help you. If you're someone that's making a lot of money from YouTube Content ID, they can, you know, let you know how this these changes might impact what you're doing or what your fans are doing. And yeah, it's all this stuff sort of still a developing story. There's lots of copyright changes that have happened. You know, we've got things that will go into place, I think it's in 2021, or some of the MMA and all the other, you know, things that they're doing in Europe to try and, you know, get copyright into the current century. So lots of changes in how things get credited and accounted for and so forth.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was our quick lightning news roundup. I guess it wasn't that quick, but...
But that we covered like 9 months. That's all that was important.
Yes. We covered
nothing
it all.
Else happened. Nothing else happened. All right. Well, we have some emails and some phone calls. And this is the point where I will say, if you would like to weigh in on something we've discussed on an episode of the podcast or something you hear in this episode, you can do so by calling our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And, you know, we just might respond to your question on the show, which is what's going to happen right now. So I've got three emails and two calls. So we'll do email, call, cool. Email. That's, yeah, break it up.
Symmetrical.
Yep, I like symmetry. All right, here we go. Hey, guys, I'm in a solo musical project called Polarity Code. I will have my first EP completed in October with a tentative release date set for January 2. In addition to working on the music, I have also been setting up the business side of things, website, email list, social media accounts, analytics, etc. With this context in mind, I have a question about Patreon. My initial plans were to launch my Patreon account well after I release the EP, perhaps even 1 year after the release of my first EP when I'm getting ready to release a second EP. My thinking was that it doesn't make sense to launch Patreon right now because I haven't given the world anything that merits asking for money in return. At the same time, however, I can certainly think of things that I could give any fans I accrue with the release of my first EP. For example, discounts on merchandise, greater insights into my music, opportunity for feedback, etc. Consequently, I'm not sure when I should launch my Patreon account. Do you have any thoughts on this? Thank you, Saral. And I emailed
a response.
Okay, go ahead.
I think he's absolutely right. If you're spending time to at the beginning of making an introduction to your music, any content you create has the potential to bring you new fans. Don't worry about any kind of hidden content for a subscription model or anything like that at this point. Like, yes, maybe for your second release, start thinking about that. But right now, I think everything you make should be as out there in the public as possible, leading people to fall in love with your music first, and then later you can worry about Patreon.
Yeah, my response in email was along that lines, but I also said that Patreon is different and that it's really, really geared towards people that are making serial content. Sure, you can get fans to just subscribe to you, and it's like whether you do anything each month or not, you know, they can get their credit card can get dinged for $4.99, and, you know, there's no really obligation for you to do anything. That's not ideal, but you can just set up where it's like, hey, these people are supporting me and their support is $1.99 a month or something. That's still not ideal for the average artist. Patreon was founded by Jack Conte, who was a YouTuber doing covers on YouTube, doing like a song a week. And so, and Pomplamoose was, they were doing a couple videos a month. So they're like, I wish fans would pay, help us pay, you know, buy video, us doing a video. And that's how the idea came. Every time we release a video, we get paid by the fans who want us to keep making these videos. So if you're someone that's in more of a traditional release cycle, I would say Patreon's not the right platform for you. It's become huge in the podcasting world. In fact, I think Patreon ultimately has found its audience and user base in the podcasting world than it did in the music world. If you go look in some of their power users, a lot of them are podcasters because podcasters make serial content. If I want to support a podcast and ensure that it keeps happening, that makes sense that I go there. Hey, I'll throw them a dollar every time they release an episode.
Good distinction, for sure.
To me, yeah, to me, the idea of like, I'm just going to go get a Patreon account doesn't make sense. You got to build that audience that is diehard first. Otherwise, it's going to be pretty sad when you launch a Patreon account and then feel this crushing weight that nobody cares. Not that they don't, but it's a very high level of fan that's going to take that commitment to give somebody their credit card for you to just basically have fun with it, because every time you release something, they're going to get dinged, or every month they're going to get dinged for it. That takes a lot of commitment and buy-in from your fans. So you need to get that in place first before you try any of this.
Agreed.
All right. I think we successfully answered that first email.
All right. One down, four to go.
Let's go to the next one. I think this one's a good one.
Hi, guys. My name is Nicole. I'm a big fan of the podcast. I've been listening to you guys for a couple years now, and you have saved my life many times. I just got done listening to the podcast about like five things that can bum you out as a musician and what to do about them. And this is actually a question about something that you touched on like right at the beginning. You mentioned that if you feel like your band has no motivation, or like the band is at a stalemate and you're looking like splitting up, here's the things that you can do to get past that. But I'm wondering what you do if the bummer is that your band is no longer together. What do you do when it feels like you're starting at ground zero again with everything? That would be an awesome thing if you guys could answer that for me. Thank you. And again, love the podcast.
All right. Thanks for that call, Nicole.
That's a way tougher question to answer, I think. At least I'm scratching my head. I'm assuming that implies there was a band name and the band is now dissolved, and so you can't carry any of that name recognition or whatever into what the next thing you do.
I have some thoughts.
Oh, okay, good.
See, you have the benefit. You're the solo artist and have usually been the front man. So unless you break up with yourself, you can carry on.
Well, right. And that is advice Lisa Lapine, our friend, you know, gave me a long time ago. She was like, just put everything out under your own name. You'll control it forever. You can always move with it.
So here was my thoughts to Nicole when I heard her call, was that I've been through this a couple times. Someday we'll have the big episode where you hear about my whole Small Town Poets journey through the label era. You've heard bits and pieces of it, but you haven't heard the big nuggets of, you know, maybe some of my personal motivations that led me to kind of step away off the road for a while and ended up in the Northwest. And I kind of went through this, wow, what next? The band didn't break up, but, you know, I departed and thought, wow, what next? Is music, am I done with music? Is it all over? And what I found is I went into this gigantic creative process like I've never done before and wrote a ton of music. And then I started a new band in the Portland area, and I was looking around on how to distribute music, or seeing what options were. This was 2003, 2004, and that's when I came across CD Baby. So it all worked out. But then that band, it was a very growing period for me as far as like musical contribution, writing, and really kind of directing the vision for it. And when that band fell apart, I went through the same thing again. Like, oh man, what next? Because I'm just a guitar player. I'm just a humble guitar player. I don't sing. And so I have to collaborate. And so I rely on others. And so that's part of my plight. And so when that band fell apart, again, it was like, what's next? And again, I just found myself going through just a deep dive in the creative process, not trying to create for any specific thing, but just creating what was coming out of me and, you know, and also started looking at collaborating with other people more. And by this time, this is when Chris, you introduced me to Henry. And we started another band called Hello Morning, which I'm very proud of that catalog that we have of music. And it's kind of just been the same cycle. It's like things come, you find people you're collaborating with, it's connecting, it's working. And then eventually, in a lot of cases, it runs its course and you kind of are left feeling what next. And to me, it's always just about diving into the creative process and really creating and just exploring and just getting the stuff out that maybe you weren't spending time doing when you were distracted by trying to manage a band or manage people's schedules and book shows and recording schedules and other life stuff outside of that, and just taking time to get in that creative process. So to me, that's what I go to. And there's no, you know, it's not like, oh, and then magically a new band shows up. It's just when you're in that creative mode and also trying to collaborate with other people, I think stuff just starts connecting again. And, you know, I actually had coffee with an artist a couple weeks ago here in town, and she was kind of in this, that same spot as Nicole. And that's kind of the advice I gave her. I'm like, just dive in, let the new stuff come out and see where it goes.
It's good advice. Because then also, just for mental health reasons, it's like you're putting the focus back on what is the thing we all want to be doing anyways, rather than like stressing over like finding players for some, you know, it's like instead of engineering a band, you're letting the process drive the creation of a potential future project.
Yeah. And it may be that it just needs a break, a little time to breathe, but it might be the doorway into something new and more exciting. It's tough. That's why, you know, you'll hear me say all the time when I speak, and I've said it on the podcast many times, the artist journey is a lifelong pursuit. It has its peaks, it has its valleys, and the peaks can be amazing. The valleys can be very desperate feeling, but it's a lifelong pursuit. And if that's what your life's path is about, you just gotta look at the bigger picture and sometimes just go to that well of creativity. And, you know, I think that's I think some of the message that people will hear at the conference this year with some of the keynote folks. So, yeah, that's my advice. All right, let's move on to the next email. Hey, Kevin and Chris, want to first thank you guys once again for all the super cool tips and tricks you've shared over the years. As of a few days ago, I hit 1 million streams on Spotify. Not bad for an instrumental artist. I'm a part of a large network of similar artists, and we have a private Facebook group where we can network playlists, do pre-saves, and just discuss strategies for promotion, like our own little DIY musician community. The one topic that comes up all the time is payola structure that is beginning to take over playlisting on Spotify. More than half the curators we talk to want to charge for placement on their playlists. It's well known that this is against Spotify in their terms of service, but I've never seen any repercussions. Some in the group have debated reporting these offenders to Spotify. Some say ignore them, and I'm sure some have started paying for placement. Curious to hear your take on this. Have you heard if it is something Spotify is going to crack down on, or are we just in a new era of payola and everyone is just going to have to bite the bullet and pay up? I have never paid for a playlist, so whereas a year ago I was getting added to dozens a day, now it's down to less than a dozen a month. All right, thanks again, Mark. So I can address that, yes, Spotify, this is against their terms of service, but it's really hard for them to even crack down on. I mean, there are literally millions and millions, probably approaching billions of playlists that users have created out on the platform. And they have no idea how to police it or manage it. They have no idea if, you know, I'm sitting at my computer making a playlist and you walk up to my desk and hand me cash and I add your track. There's just no way, no way. But I'm sure if somebody got pretty vocal about it, they would crack down on it. But I think it's in this weird state right now. And I don't know. What is your thoughts, Chris?
Well, I don't know. I mean, this might be naive of me to say, but my first suspicion whenever I come across a playlist that's asking to be paid for some placement is that their playlist is worthless. Who is passionate about curating an awesome playlist and promoting it to super engaged listeners if they're collecting money from it? And like, How does that, I don't know. Does that make any sense? Like I kind of immediately just dismiss it as like a shit playlist. That's going to maybe, even if it has tens of thousands of followers, they might all be like super disengaged listeners. And just makes me very suspicious on a lot of fronts. And I would say it's not worth doing for many reasons.
Yeah. And I would probably put the distinction here that, you know, we've talked about Submit Hub and some of those other services. A lot of those services, what you're paying for is a guaranteed listen by the curator. Whether or not they put you in their playlist is their discretion. Some of those services, some of them are just like, actually, like, we're paying and we're going to pitch. We're like, hey, here's some new tracks by some artists. Are you interested? So there's that distinction. But if someone's saying, give me $150 and I'll add you to this playlist, chances are, even if you're getting streams, that they're worthless. So one of the things that the big games that I've noticed out there in the playlisting world that pops up that people do in order to create a playlist that has real followers, but then they sell placement that's probably worthless. They do it with movie soundtracks. So a movie that has a lot of music in it comes out, say like A Star Is Born. And I saw this, I finally made sense of it to me with the Lego Movie 2 soundtrack. I saw that movie with my daughters, has some really cool music in it. And I went on Spotify and it looked like the official soundtrack, but it was a playlist. A lot of the songs were in there, but as you got further down, there's all this other music that was not in the movie. The playlist was like 50 tracks long. The movie did not have 50 songs in it. And so what someone did is they created this playlist right when the movie was coming out. People loved the music in the movie, went searching, followed the playlist, were listening to it, but then they were selling placement for the other places, or just putting their own music or other artists, you know, on their label into that playlist. And some of it just didn't match the vibe. And some of it's like, that's not why I'm here. So it really ultimately didn't help that artist. They may have gotten a lot of plays, but again, you know, we've talked about the whole dry stream paradox thing. They're streams, but you're not building fans. And so if your goal is to just have a number next to your tracks, sure, go pay for streams. Well, I take that back. Don't pay for streams. That's stupid. but if that's your goal, then maybe that accomplished your goal. But if your goal is to build fans who love your music so much that they want to listen to it over and over again, and they anticipate your other releases, that's not the strategy. So that's my two cents.
Amen.
And eventually this is going to be, you know, I've talked about how I feel like Spotify has proven the point that music engagement in a streaming world can be fundamentally different with how people, you know, make collections around mood, about what they're doing, whether they're exercising or they're chilling at a coffee shop, or all these things can be fundamentally different. But I don't think they've perfected it. And so that's a problem that, you know, they're surfacing a lot of issues that other companies can provide solutions for before the problem arises on their platform. And so we'll see what happens. All right, let's move on to the next call.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to say I really appreciate everything you guys are doing with the podcast. It's really been useful for me. One question I have is, you know, I'm a songwriter and I've been writing songs for years. I actually took about a six-year hiatus, and I'm trying to get back to music, and I'm trying to get a band together, and I'm wondering, do I have to share my copyright? Do I have to give them a percentage of my music? If it's music I've already written and they're going to be adding music to my songs, and if so, how do you split that up? Thanks.
Chris, do you have thoughts?
I do. So it depends, which I know is not a very helpful answer, but if you have really fully composed these songs and the guys are coming in, or I'm assuming guys, but whatever, you know, whoever's coming in to be in the band, it's a very sexist assumption on my part, wasn't it? If they're coming in,
people, they're all just people,
people
Chris.
In the band. Basically if they're contributing like stuff that's so cool and becomes so kind of incremental, or not incremental. what's the word? So,
Integral.
Yeah. Yes. Important to the song that afterwards, if you were to go and play the song solo, you're thinking, oh man, that guitar riff that the guitar player added really kind of is part of this song now. And I miss it because it's not here. Like that could be argument for giving this person some ownership in the songwriting and the publishing copyright of the song. If they're really kind of just doing a basic band arrangement, you definitely don't need to include them on the songwriting publishing side of it. Whether you guys are going to co-own the sound recording is maybe a consideration you want to make, particularly if you're kind of like a we're all in this together kind of band and everyone's working to use gig money to fund the album together. Like, that's a situation where I feel like everyone should probably own the sound recording. What you share or keep for yourself in the songwriting department really depends.
Yeah, ultimately, if you are the main artist, like it's mostly your music and it's mostly your artistic vision, you got to find a way to keep people interested in being a part of what you're doing. So whether it's you just compensate them, you know, have some sort of set compensation for what they contribute, or if you cut them in, but don't go overboard cutting them in just because you feel bad, you know, because that can come back and bite you. Just think about it, you know, talk to them like, hey, this is, you know, my musical project, but I want you guys invested. I want you guys to contribute. What does that look like? What's interesting to you to keep you on board? So those are just a lot of the conversations we get scared to have. And then usually it ends up bad. So just have that conversation up front.
Right.
I've got one more email and it's a short one. And I know, Chris, you've got to get going. So here we go. Hi there. Love your podcast. I have a question. What if you want to release your complete EP album in separate singles on the online platforms every 2 weeks? First, we release our CD and vinyl and only one or two songs on Spotify, etc. after the official release, the rest of the songs. When they are all released, of course, I want to combine them on one album. How to do that with the IRCC codes, just like when you release only one separate single? Second question, do you already know when the next conference will be in Valencia? Cheers, Mirham. If I'm understanding the question correctly, the plan is to release a CD or vinyl, say day one. We'll just call it day one for the release day, but not on the platforms. And then just trickle out the singles over the course of time. And then once they're all out there, kind of regroup them as the full album and release that. To me, if this is the same album that you released on day one, to me, that seems, I don't know, irritating to the fans. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, it's a form of windowing. It's like incremental. Now I can finally use the word incremental correctly. Incremental windowing, which you technically could do. I mean, you definitely could do it. And I know the Chainsmokers did a thing where they would release a single and then they'd release another single. But that particular release had both songs. Then they released another single down the road, and that release had all three songs. So it was this sort of ever-growing EP or whatever it was. And I think it worked for them. But when that fell in conjunction with the release of the physical CD and vinyl, I'm not sure. And I do feel like if you release the CD and vinyl on Friday and then I have to wait on Spotify a month or whatever to hear everything, yeah, you're just inconveniencing your fans. So if you're set on doing something like that, maybe it's to lead up to the release of the physical format.
Yeah. Or the other thing I would say is I could get on board with having a physical product out a couple weeks first, where maybe it's a special signed edition, something special that just gets the diehard fans excited, spending some money up front. So maybe you have some cash, but it can't be like the album's been out on CD for a year and here's the EP that's the same that's already been out for a year. That's too much. I would say, you know, at the most, if you wanted to drop some physical first or vinyl, like vinyl or CD, that it's a couple weeks that really gets the diehards something to feel like they're getting something more than what, you know, people might just experience on the streaming platforms. And then, you know, have it all come out together. So I'm not a big fan of windowing, but it can work. If you've got the right fans and your fans are really excited for the release, it can work. But I'm not, is a strategy, not that big of a fan, because typically where we're at as artists is we just need people to want to listen to the music. We need to make it available anywhere possible, everywhere possible where music is being streamed, download, listened to, and not eliminate the possibility of making fans because I didn't engage on the platform that they're on.
Yeah, and I think windowing makes weird assumptions about your fans. Like, it assumes that, oh, I need to get this person to spend way more money because if they can get it on Spotify or Apple Music, they're not going to give me that money. And I think that, like, really, like, if a listener of yours is inclined to purchase a CD or a vinyl record, they're probably also listening on streaming. And if they're listening on streaming and they love you that much, they're also going to be inclined to purchase the physical format when you ask them to and when you make it worth their while and there's some special connection between you and your audience. Like, it doesn't seem like it's ever an either or kind of thing these days. Like, there's one kind of fan that's going to buy your merch and they're probably also listening on Spotify. So you're not losing anyone or gaining anyone. Does that make sense? Like, based on the strategy.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, I agree that you start making assumptions about your fans and you can make the wrong assumption. Now, if you're diving into the data and you have a lot of historical sales and release patterns and things to build a strategy off of, that is a little different. But if you're just assuming that, hey, this is how it's going to be or it's going to work better for me if I do it this way, you might really, really struggle and realize, wow, that did not happen like I thought it would. So those are our thoughts. If you would like to call in and ask a question or comment or weigh in on one of the topics we've discussed in this episode or any previous episode, you can do so at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. It's on Spotify in their podcast section. It's at the iTunes podcast section, which powers a lot of the podcast apps that are, you know, out there. So wherever you're listening, just be sure to go and subscribe, and that way you don't miss an episode. Chris, next time I see you, it'll be Austin.
It's coming up quick. Can't wait. It's going to be really fun. If anyone hears this and still has time to get a ticket and go, you should join us.
Yes, especially if you're in Texas. We came here for you. We're going to Austin for you. Be there. There's enough people in the state of Texas alone that should be there to fill this place 10 times over. So it's affordable. We did it for you. And it's going to be a great event. And I can't wait to be there and hang out with all our friends that we see every year. It's like a family reunion now at this point.
It is. And wait, I'm just now realizing, I don't think we, did we answer the question about the Valencia conference? Did you answer him?
We did not.
No, it's going to be in April, right?
I'm going to give you an unofficial sneak peek. It is looking like it's going to be the last weekend in May.
Oh, a change. Change in the weather. I'm sure the weather will still be beautiful.
It'll be better. But yes, that's what we're looking at. We will have an official announcement soon, but that's what the weekend we're looking at. It works better for Berkeley. It was a weekend we're like, hey, that could work for us. It actually unlocks some more opportunity, I believe, on the performance opportunity side, because after April, out in that plaza, they have weekly concerts that Berkeley powers, like on Friday and Saturdays out in that plaza.
That'd be cool to keep it all kind of...
They put the stage over the water. It's pretty amazing. You know, Chris, those of you that have been to Valencia know exactly what I'm talking about is when I say the water. But yeah, so it's going to be good. I'm actually looking forward to having it there in May. But we will have an official announcement. I know many of you have asked me because you plan tours around Europe and want to make sure that you can carve out some time to be there, but that's what it's looking like.
Sweet.
All right. Well, I only have about a million things to do in the next 2 weeks before the conference starts.
It's a few more than me, but I feel that too.
And I'm doing the interview with Questlove, and while that sounds exciting, it's also pretty nerve-wracking. I don't want him to think I'm an idiot.
No pressure. I know.
Oh no, Questlove thinks I'm an idiot.
You always do. I mean, you interviewed Mary and you've given your own keynote. You always do well. So you should just not even prepare. You. Just phone it in.
That's usually when I'm at my best. Absolutely not. All right. Well, Chris, I know you got to run. I look forward to seeing you in Austin, and you probably won't need a jacket. I'm going to bring my cool jackets because that's, I got to wear a jacket, but it's going to be hot.
I'm going to bring one jacket for the AC hotel, and that's it. I'll see you there.
See you there. That's going to do it for this episode. We'll catch you next time. Bye.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.